Welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the pod of thunder and rock and roll. And I've got another great show from last week's Rock and Wrestling Rager at Sea. I can't believe it's been a week already. Oh, I'm jonesing for it. But don't worry, the Triple Whammy is coming February 1st to the 5th. ChrisJerichoCruise.com. Stay tuned for all information. But you're going to get more exclusive live podcasts just like this one. The Gathering of the Guerreros. We recorded it live on the ship, on the pool deck, with Eddie's wife, Vicky, his daughter, Shawl, and his nephew, a.k.a. tag team partner, a.k.a. little brother, Chavo Guerrero Jr. Shared some great stories and memories of the late, great Eddie Guerrero, and you're going to hear them all. Believe me, you're going to laugh, you're going to cry, you might get a little bit grossed out. But first, we're going to get our laugh on with Duff McKagan and the patented joke of the week.
Hey, Chris Jericho, it's Duff McKagan calling you. I hope you're doing well. I just got down to rehearsal, but earlier in the day I was working in my garden, and my neighbor peeked over the fence and said, "What are you doing?" I said, "Well, I'm putting all my plants in alphabetical order." She said, "Well, I really don't know how you find the time." I said, "That's easy. It's right next to sage." Thank you very much. Bye.
Very nice. I like that one. Duff very rarely sends in a bad one, because even the bad ones, I still get a kick out of it. Just the fact that he's doing it, Rock and Roll Hall of Famer, currently working on new Guns N' Roses material, getting ready to do more Guns N' Roses songs, and always has time for little old Talk is Jericho and the joke of the week. So thanks to everyone who came on the cruise last week. We had a great time, lots of awesome music, great matches, one of the greatest live television shows you'll ever see on AEW Dynamite, hilarious comedy, and of course, don't forget the great live podcast that you can only hear on the Jericho Cruise for the first time, but we're always going to play it for you here as well. It's a very special, special night for all of us. Eddie Guerrero fans, if you knew him, if you loved him, if you watched him wrestle, you're going to want to hear this one. The Gathering of the Guerreros. Right now on Talk is Jericho.
All right, this is going to be a fun one. It's the Gathering of the Guerreros here. We're going to bring out Vicky Guerrero, Chavo Guerrero, and Shawl Guerrero here tonight, today on the cruise. Look at them. Have a seat. Come on, Vicky. Come on. Look at that leg. As soon as you walked on, the wind hit it. It's like Marilyn Monroe. This is Eddie's daughter, Shawl. You guys know Chavo over here, and of course, Vicky. With Chavo, there's a couple cocktails. He takes his shirt off sometimes. He's been known to do that.
Once or twice.
Last year we had a great podcast, a great chat with DDP and Rey Mysterio and Conan talking about Eddie Guerrero. Obviously a great, great guy, one of our favorites. And I thought it'd be a lot of fun and maybe a little emotional to have Eddie's family here to remember what a great and also very complex man Eddie Guerrero was and is. It's been 15 years since he passed. Yep. Do you still miss him, think about him?
Gosh, you know, there's not a day that goes by that I don't think about him, or a song comes on, or there's a place. Like, if I go to El Paso, that seems to hit pretty hard when I go over there. But yeah, it's you never forget.
Funny because I met your husband, Chris. Vicky's remarried, great guy. But when I first met him, I was almost like, all right, motherfucker.
I think we were all like that.
You better
what
be nice
to
him.
Man?
Yeah, you should see my daughter, Sherilyn. She gave him the third riot act.
Well, Shawl, you just made a great point. What was that like for you when your mom gets remarried?
It's definitely complex. Of course, like, first and foremost, I just wanted someone that was going to love my mom deeply and take care of her and have companionship with. And first of all, Chris is every single one of those things. So thank you, Chris, for loving my very complicated and loud mother.
Excuse me! I had to get one in.
Big pop, big pop.
Every goddamn day. But also, it was very complex, you know, because my dad was, we were so close, and, you know, it's dealing with, like, Chris is not going to do things the way my dad did it, or he's just going to have different feelings about different things, and So
he's not going to be absolutely insane like your dad.
He's a little insane.
How old were you when he passed away?
I was 15.
So that's, you're old enough to remember a lot of stuff about your dad, of course, obviously.
Yeah.
You've grown up to be, and your sister as well, beautiful young ladies. I don't know if you've seen Shawl with the Vaudettes on stage. I was thinking this last night. You're a performer. It's in your blood.
Thank you.
It's your family lineage. What do you think, would Eddie be proud of you? Would he want you to put more clothes on?
I don't think he would want, he would be like, what are you wearing? I don't even think he'd let me out of the house, but I think he would be proud of me. Like, I'm not my dad. I'm not going to perform like my dad, but I think he would be, first of all.
Nobody was.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, exactly. But I think he would want me to be happy first and foremost and do my absolute best in everything I do. And I think he would be proud of that, even if I don't have very many clothes on.
How about you, Vito? Do you miss, obviously you miss Eddie. What do you miss about him all these years later?
Hey, so let's get this out of the way real quick, guys. Eddie. Hey, I want to tell you this. I still get that chant every time I wrestle at an independent show or anything like that. I get an Eddie chant out there, and it's beautiful, guys. So thank you very much. Don't ever forget Eddie Guerrero. There was never, ever going to be anybody else ever like him in the ring or out of the ring. Crazy or not as crazy, but yes. I'm sorry, Chris. I had to get that out of the way.
But what do you miss? What are you missing about him all these years later?
You know what? I miss about my brother Eddie. Yes, he was my uncle, but we grew up 3 years apart from each other. So we grew up as he was the big brother that I didn't have, and I was the little brother he didn't have, and we were both by our families. We were both the mistakes. So we both were not supposed to be here. He was my grandfather Gory's late mistake, and I was my father's Chavo classic, rest his soul. I was his early mistake. In fact, my dad used to call me the BRK, the busted rubber kid.
Oh my God.
I'm not kidding, and I just said this right now, so it's going to be viral, and I know everybody will be walking. Hey, no more, hey, Chavito, I lie, cheat, steals. But hey, BRK, boom, busted. Hey, you know what? I miss Eddie so much. I mean, I miss our, he was my go-to guy. That's what I miss about Eddie. He was my go-to guy. He was the guy that I would call, because it's the relationship that I had with my dad, and I love him to death, but he wasn't that guy for me to call and ask for advice on life. And Eddie was. Eddie was my guy that I just called, and just gave me like heartfelt advice, like what he felt. The guy was so blessed. He had such the spirit of the Holy Spirit inside of him, and not to get all religious, but that guy was just different, man. He had, for all of his flaws, man, he had just something super special about him, something looking over him all the time. And just the advice that he would give me on in the ring and out of the ring with marriage and how you treat people and different stuff like that, dude, that's what I miss the most.
And y'all fought like brothers. I mean,
we fought like brothers and loved like brothers, but we did. There was never one time that we ever struck each other because the love was too much, but there were times that we were face to face and it was like, you go, you jump. Eddie,
you feeling froggy?
You feeling froggy? Yeah. Well, then jump.
Yeah, like, oh, I
never heard that before, homeboy. Come on, really? That's all you got?
But I hadn't heard that before one time. He goes, you feeling froggy? I'm like, I don't know. What does that mean? You want to jump? I said, that's terrible. So jump. Didn't Eddie almost try and kill you when you were a baby?
Yeah. So
what?
Eddie was the baby of the family, right? He was 18 years younger than my dad, Chavo Classic. He was the baby of the family and getting all the attention. And then, 3 years later, I come around. So Eddie wasn't getting the attention that I was getting now. Now it's, oh my God, he's so cute. You know, I was a super good looking baby. But, and so, yeah, Eddie grabbed the telephone cord. They didn't see us for a minute. My mom walked into the bedroom, some bedroom at a party, and Eddie had the telephone cord wrapped around my neck and was like pulling, like holy literally, like this. And I was turning all like, you know, red or blue or whatever I was. My mother had to be like, "What the hell? What are you doing?" And then Eddie got done, kind of just walked away, like.
That was how he walked. That was how he walked.
Even that, even back then, when he was a little kid, he walked like this.
Oh, but we love hard and fight hard. Even when I was a kid, you know, when you were like, "What does this mean, feeling froggy? What does this mean?" He would be like, "Are you working me, girl?" And I would be like, "What?
Are you working me?"
He told that to me when I would be like talking back. He'd be like, "Are you working me, girl?" I'd be like, "I don't understand what that means." Until I got in the wrestling business, I was like, "Oh, I get it now."
What kind of a dad was Eddie for you, Shaw?
I had two different dads. Before Dad got off the drugs and alcohol, if I'm being very honest, he was a scary dad. He was very scary, very unpredictable. He was really hard on me. And I know it came from a place of love. He was doing his best, just like we're all trying to do our best with our situation. But he was really scary. Especially, you know, just as a kid witnessing what Mom went through with Dad. And I'm not going to get emotional, but it was a scary house to live in. I'll just say that.
Vicky, you have a great relationship with my wife, Jessica, and you guys are very similar in that you guys held your family together. If it wasn't for my wife, I wouldn't be here. And if it wasn't for you holding your family together, and when Shaw says these things, because we all talk about the great Eddie, but there was the dark side to him. We all saw it. We were all there. How was that for you, holding your family together when you have this guy that you love, but he's completely off his rocker, where his girls are scared of him?
Yeah, I'm writing my book right now, and I'm writing about life with Eddie.
Cheap plug. I'll buy it.
You know, it's really hard because back in those days, there's a lot of partying going on, and it was always accepted. You know, it was the thing to do. Was the guys got hurt, instead of missing work, you took pills. And so to me, I thought it was the norm at first. I thought everything's okay. He's just trying to cover up, you know, his injuries. But then I started seeing that I was driving him everywhere. I was picking him up because he couldn't function. I mean, what y'all saw in the ring, he would turn on his lights on the ring. When he stepped in that ring, he loved what he did. But coming home, it was a mess. I mean, it was two sides of Eddie. There was the Eddie that was, he didn't like the drugs, but the drugs liked him, and he fought that all the time. So it was very, and Chavito saw a lot of what we went through, and I hid a lot from the girls, so when it was a bad night, the girls knew when it was a bad night, and whenever it was a good day, we all enjoyed watching TV or, you know, enjoying Eddie's time, but when it was a bad day, we left Eddie alone.
You kept us together.
Yeah.
You 100%, and I love Dad, and God rest his soul, 100%, but if it wasn't for my mom being so strong every day at 3 o'clock in the morning, comforting us and being like, "It's okay, Dad's just whatever," and like what she kept us going. So just
saying
that.
Did you ever bring a date home or a boyfriend home or anything like that?
Weird thing. So when Dad, when
I share.
Okay. No, but like when I was around 15 and I had, you know, Dad number two, and Dad was super healthy. We talked about everything. He was my spiritual advisor. He was, you know, my hug, and you know, we had to work through that a lot to get to that point. Actually, he was great. Mom was bad. Oh. Mom was threatened. I came home one day and like I just had my first kiss in middle school, and instead of being like super excited like how you should be, I was like, oh shit, because I can't lie. I actually can't lie. Sorry, Dad, I can't. And I was coming home like, oh my God, I'm going to get my ass beat. I'm going to get my ass beat by my dad. And I actually come up to him, and he's in his little, you know, those little video game chairs, like those little rockers on the floor.
Yeah.
He's there playing his Madden. And I was like, "Dad, I need to talk to you." And he was like, what's up? I was like, no, like, I need to talk to you. And I was like, I had my first kiss. And he put the video game down, which is already like, oh, shit. He put it down, and he looked at me, and he was like, did he touch you anywhere? And I was like, no, sir. And then he was just like, okay. And then I was completely like, oh, wow, that's new. That's new. And then mom found out. She was like, oh, my God, I cannot. Like, you were just like, I don't even know if you wanted to let me have a boyfriend. She's too young. But he was full of surprises, most definitely.
Do you have this guy's name? Because I'm going to go find him right now. And I'm going to beat his ass.
I'm married now. It's fine.
Chavo, how was that for you as the uncle of these girls and, you know, obviously Vicky close to you? Would you ever tell Eddie, like, back off, or would you talk to him about that sort of stuff?
You know, it's funny you guys, you bring that up. I'm actually kind of going through that, like, actually right now in my life, because I'm just realizing that we're a product of our environment, a product for what we grew up in. And the way Eddie grew up and the way I grew up, I mean, the father figures in that family ruled with an iron fist. These guys were the toughest guys around, period, over and out. There was nobody tougher than Gory Guerrero. I don't care who you are. You know, Chavo Classic was pretty tough too. So we grew up in this environment that we emulated, even though we didn't want to, and we did. And I'm like, seriously, like, right now realizing my flaws of what I, the tyrant that you become.
Right.
And you don't want to be that guy. You're doing it out of love, and there's nothing more important to Eddie or to myself, because I know, and he talked about you all the time, was his family, his wife and his kids. But we become this guy that's like the guy that we don't want to become. We become our dads. And unfortunately, it sucks. And we have to, like, break out of that. You guys all got to break out of that. But, like, for real, you know, and it's like,
yeah.
And to the wives out there of wrestlers, we got the easy job. We got the job of going out and being a celebrity and you know, wrestling and traveling the world. And I'm not saying that it's easy, but it's easy. It's we're on cruise control. We just go do it and get in the ring and work hard and do whatever we want. And these women my wife's over there somewhere. Sherry, I love you. Love you, babe.
Woo!
Hey, you did it, girl. We're only together now is because of her. Yeah, Sherry. But it's it's all about, you know what, and that's, and I just had to get that out because, man, it's without the women in the Guerrero family, but in wrestling, those women, they make everything work. They make it all work, because if it was up to us, I would have been divorced 6 months after I got married. Yeah. And, you know, married 18 different times.
Right.
You know, also, the women are the ones that had to discipline, you know,
that's clean right.
The house, you know, wash the clothes. The guys got to come home, and the kids got the best side of Eddie and the husbands, because, oh, dad comes home from an overseas trip. There's toys and stuff for them. I'm like, why? They don't deserve it. Because they just got in trouble, and I'm ready for Eddie to come home, because I'm like, take them.
I don't know. Right. I thought I deserved it. I thought I was pretty good.
But you're so true. We have that in our house, too.
Yeah.
Jess calls it mean mommy. You come home, and I have to be mean mommy because you're the good guy. But that's the other side of it, right?
Yeah. And Eddie's mom is the one who sat me down many times. And in fact, in the living room, we'd watch the guys train, and she's like, if you're going to marry my son, you're going to be alone for 90% of your time. And you have to do everything. You have to be the mom, the dad, the discipline, the planner, everything. And I was like, I'm fine. I can handle that.
Right.
It's fine. Well, that was before kids. Now, especially after Eddie passed away, you know, and all her advice keeps coming back to me. And I'm just like, man, she knew her shit.
Right. Well, it's kind of interesting to me. I want to ask about that, because you came into a wrestling family. Where did you meet Eddie, and how was it kind of becoming part of the Guerrero family?
Tell us, Mom, how you met Dad.
So my best friend knew Eddie's best friend. And so we went out, and I told my best friend, I said, look, we're going to go to a nightclub, because if he's a loser or I don't like him, we can just go somewhere else. And I didn't have any wrestling. I didn't like wrestling because I was a cheerleader. I was the oldest of four brothers. So I was into the football team and everything and, you know, cheerleading and gymnastics. Eddie was late. He's like 2 hours late. I'm like, you know what? Let's just go ahead and go. Well, we're dancing, and then my friend Tina came up, and she goes, "This is Eddie." And she is like, "This is Eddie." Like, she thought he was hot. And I look at him, and he's like, "Oh, hey, how's it going?" I'm like, "Fine. I'm going to go walk around. Fine, whatever." But then I was like, "Oh, my gosh," because the high school I went to, it was very clean cut. The guys had their haircuts above their ears, had to wear collar shirts. Eddie came in, and I went to school at Cowboys. When Eddie came in, he had the long hair, the big muscles, the tight jeans, and the cowboy boots. And I was like, I'll wait for him to come right back around.
And she was into guys with that hunched over with a shitty mustache, with a mullet, a full-on mullet, and like guys that, like, were into Rush or something. Like, she was into that.
Yes. Tejano jeans.
Oh, the Tejano jeans. She loved the Tejano jeans with a belt and elastic.
No, so my curfew was at 1 o'clock in the morning. And we danced and we hit it off. And he actually kissed me during the Bengals song, "A Walk Like an Egyptian."
Oh. Yeah.
And so it was probably like 12 o'clock. And Tina's like, I lived an hour away from El Paso. And I was like, I need to get home. And so when at the time, she's like, "You're going to miss your curfew." I had the car. And I missed it. I mean, we talked outside for like 3 hours. And back then, you didn't have cell phones. It was all landlines. So I said, you know what? This is worth taking my car away. This is worth everything because I was liking him a lot. Get home. Nobody's up. And I was like, sweet. No one heard me come in. And the next morning, my mom goes, "Oh, so how was your night?" I'm like, "Fine." And she goes, what happened?" I said, "Oh, I met this really cute guy. His name was Eddie Guerrero." She goes, "Oh, I know the family." I was like,
"They're crazy."
I go, the wrestler Eddie Guerrero. She's like, "Yeah, Eddie, my grandfather used to make Eddie's dad's boots and robes in a leather store in El Paso."
Really?
And when we were 2 years old, Eddie and I played in the playpen while his dad came and got his stuff tried on.
No kidding.
Awkward.
That's funny.
I'm sure we're doing more than playing in the playpen. Hey,
touch me here. Chavo, did you ever know Gory? He had passed away before you knew him.
My grandfather?
Yeah.
No, absolutely. He didn't pass away till I was 17, maybe.
Oh, okay, so you knew him.
Oh,
absolutely. I want to hear Vicky too. Tell us about Gory Guerrero.
So, hey, first of all, where are my LWO boys at? I tell them I was going to say, "Hey, what up, guys?" And then everybody up there, yes, it just kicked in. So, my grandfather lived with us. We went from El Paso, my father, Chavo Classic, he was just Chavo back then. There was no senior. He was just there. So he went wrestling, and he started wrestling at the Olympic Auditorium for Mike LaBelle in like 1975. And originally we were gonna move for 6 months.
To LA.
From El Paso to LA. And that 6 months turned into, you know, 40 years.
Right.
But he started wrestling there, and we were in an apartment, and my grandfather came down and lived with us for a year in that apartment. He just slept on the couch.
Mm.
Yeah, I was
what was
six,
he like?
7 years old. He was excellent. My grandfather was the nicest guy, just like loving. I loved him to death. But then, I knew there was a weird side to him, because not weird, but like a tough side. Because one time we were watching TV, and somebody on TV got stabbed, and I went, "Oh man, that must really hurt." And my grandfather looked at me and goes, no, it doesn't hurt very much.
What?
And I was like, what? And he's like, yeah, oh, I've been stabbed like 7 times. One here. And I'm like, who is this guy? Like, what? Like, this is just my grandfather Gory, you know?
Yeah.
But Tomasi was great. My father was the oldest boy, was definitely super hard on him. Probably Mondo a little less with Hector, and then less with Linda, and then less with Eddie. But I did see him, you know, be very rule the iron hand, an iron fist against Eddie a couple different times for sure. Where I'd stand up for Eddie, like stop, don't do that. But he was tough, man. He came from a real rough childhood himself. But that guy was, they said, the toughest guy, the man in Mexico.
No, there's a great picture that I saw maybe at Linda's house, at your grandma's house.
Right.
And you know which one it is, where Gory's in a bridge with all the kids.
Iconic.
Balanced on his body.
They're standing on a door.
Yeah, he's on a bridge with the door on his stomach and all four or five of the kids are.
It was Cookie.
The daughter.
Cookie,
my Linda.
Dad, Mondo, Hector. Linda, and then Eddie was a baby in my grandmother's arms, and they were all standing on my grandfather. He was in the bridge, and they all were standing on him, and it was like the Christmas card. Hey, don't f*** with us. I'll bridge you to
death. Not be that, baby.
How was that for you, Vicky, when you first met the family? Were they gracious to you off the start?
Yeah, I mean, this family was so loving, and I even started going to church just to see Eddie before he would go wrestle on Sundays in Juarez. Because he was busy, I was working. And this family was so gracious, and his mom was so loving. And it was just a regular family. There was fighting, there was loving, and then they fight again, and then you love. But it was incredible. I mean, it was a good upbringing, you know, to get to know I respected the wrestling business because I knew nothing about it, but watching the family operate the Coliseum in El Paso and seeing how the family worked together and started learning about the business, they were very close when it came to that.
Shaul, when you grew up, did you know, like, that Eddie Guerrero was Eddie Guerrero? Did you know how good he was?
I always, like, respected my dad's work because whenever he would take us to the back, whether it was a live event or TV, he'd be like, you don't breathe, you don't talk unless you're spoken to. Like, very, like, just, like, don't fuck up.
Right,
like,
right.
And I'm, like, 5. I'm like, okay. But I honestly didn't know he was, like, Eddie Guerrero until I got in the business and I was starting to understand from my first bump, like, oh, shit. This kind of sucks, but it's kind of amazing right now. And then when I really studied him when I was working and really, like, actually having conversations about how hard this business is and finding out for myself, it was, like, it was a huge awakening for me. And I'm just extremely humbled that I even got to do it at all. And,
right.
You know, I wish every day I could have had a conversation with Dad about everything I went through with FCW
business,
and NXT and everything like that, but so that was huge. But I mean, he's just a different person to me than what you guys got to see every week, and he gave everything to you guys every single week. I just knew a completely different dude, for sure. Speaking of, like, how we fight hard and love hard, and our family has discipline on lock. My favorite story about my dad, if you don't mind me sharing I just want to talk about what a great disciplinarian my father is. So I'm in middle school, like around 14, and I went to a school dance, and my best friend taught me how to grind. Do you guys know what that is?
Yes, I've seen your act. I know exactly what it is now.
Touche. All right, touche. The next day I was at dance practice, and some mother that was chaperoning at the dance saw how great of a grinder I was and decided to tell my father and mother. And, like, we're leaving practice, and he's silent, like, bad silent. And I was like, what's going on? And Sherilyn looks at me like, you're f***. And I was like, oh, shit. But I didn't know. I didn't do anything wrong.
But when Dad was quiet, shit was going on. We knew it was gonna, something was going on.
It was bad. Anyway, fast forward, we get home, complete car ride is silent, and he was like, "What's grinding, Shaw? I don't know what it is." Afterward, finding out my dad's life outside of wrestling, like the party hard, I was like, he knew.
You're like, it's grinding is when you get the tortilla and you get the masa and you're rubbing, you're grinding it to make the flour tortilla.
That should have been my answer. Like, oh, Dad, it's, yeah. But he played dumb and he was like, show me what grinding was. And then my heart dropped in my stomach and I was like, oh, shit. And I was like, I can't do that. And he like put his leg out. He was like, show me. And I was like, I can't do it. I'm in tears. Like, you know, like those tears where you're like. And he was like, fine. He sat my mother down in front of me on a chair. And I gave my mother.
I said, Vicky, show me.
And I. Well, he made me grind on my mom. Yes, I gave my mother, a lap dance. And I'm crying the entire time. Here I am, I'm like. Yeah. And but I'll tell you what, I did not grind again until I was in college, like junior year. Okay, so he was a fabulous disciplinarian because that shit stuck.
I just had thought of him yelling and his heart was broken because, you know, he loved the girls, but to hear how he was punishing Shaw, like the yelling was like, he put me and Cheryl in another room, like he goes, y'all stay here. So I knew it was pretty bad.
It wasn't the most fun night I've had. But Shaw, it was really funny. Like that's my party story.
Show me how you grind. Show me how. She was like, no, show it for real. Okay.
There's a story. I should probably not tell this, but I'll tell it.
Tell it.
Okay. There's a lot of stories we can tell.
Yeah. It's actually not too bad. So we were in Mexico. We used to stay at the Plaza Madrid. You were there. I think actually, I don't think I met you because you used to come and stay, but we never crossed paths.
Yeah.
So we used to hang out with Black Cat was his name. Victor Mar. He was a great, great guy. He was half Japanese, half Chinese. Half Japanese, half Mexican. And he was worked for New Japan Pro Wrestling. And he was like the liaison for the foreign guys. So really tight with me and Eddie and Dean and Benoit and all the guys. So Kat was in Mexico, and me and Eddie and Kat were hanging out and drank way too much mezcal. It's not even tequila, it's mezcal. Yeah. It smells like an ashtray. It was just vile, terrible stuff. Drank way too much, completely out of control. It's one of those ones where you wake up in your room, you don't know how you got there. So the phone rings, and it's Eddie. Come to my room. What? Come to my room, motherfucker. Okay, are you all right? Just come to my room. I go to the room. He takes his sheets back. He goes, look at this. There's poop in the bed. He goes, look at this. I go, oh, dude. He goes, you know what happened? I go, what? He goes, Black Cat screwed me in the ass. I said, what? He goes, Black Cat screwed me in the ass. I said, what? He goes, I got so drunk, I passed out, and there's poop in the bed. He must have done that. I said, dude, no. He goes, call Black Cat right now. Hey, Kat, Eddie wants to talk to you. He thinks you screwed him in the ass. He's like, what? Because he passed out in the bed like an hour. We stayed there talking. So Kat comes to the room, and Kat was super calm, and Eddie was furious. He's convinced that Black Cat suddenly turned gay and decided to just poke Eddie in the rear end. And I was like, why would you even think that? He's like, that's what happened. I said, that doesn't even happen. That doesn't happen. So we had to sit him down, and it's like, dude, you just basically shit the bed because you're too drunk. It took an hour to calm him down because he was convinced he had been anally probed by Black Cat, who was married with five kids or whatever. But that was Eddie, like you said, when he gets something in his head, he turns psycho on you, right?
Yep, he sure does.
Chavo, tell us about some of those times. Uncle Eddie is my favorite wrestler.
I could just imagine that right now, Eddie going,
you can see
hey,
it.
Man. What's wrong, Eddie? Hey, I think Black Cat fucked me in the ass.
What? What are you laughing at? What? How can I not laugh?
Hey,
what are you talking about?
One time, so Eddie would like we would mess with each other all the time and kind of rib each other just by like messing like jokes and stuff all the time. So he'd call me, "Hey, five head," because I got a bigger forehead. my hair starts a little bit further back. So he was like, "Hey, five head," and I was like, "Oh yeah, like instead of forehead, five head. Yeah, funny. Oh, good." So Eddie had big eyebrows, like kind of big. His eyebrows or like the muscle, the bone around the eyebrow was kind of bigger. So I'd call him Easy Cro-Magnum.
Oh. Right?
He's like, Cro-Magnum. So he was like, "Hey, five head. Hey, Cro-Magnum." This went on for years. This went on for probably 8 years, maybe longer. So one time we were working, I don't know, somewhere, and he goes, "Hey, five head." And I said, "Hey, yeah, Cro-Magnum, Cro-Magnum." And he goes, "Hey, man. What does Cro-Magnum mean?" And I go, "Cro-Magnum, like you know, like you're a Neanderthal, you know, you're like," and he goes, "Hey, fuck you, man." And I go, "Wait a minute, for 8 years I've been calling you Cro-Magnum and you don't know what it meant?" I didn't know what it meant, man. I just laughed every time.
He thought it was a loving term of endearment this entire time.
But that was Eddie. Eddie, one time, Turi, his best friend, Arturo, Turi, had a secondhand like bread shop, you know, like it was like a liquor store at night, you know. So after the club, they'd always go out to, you know, they get done with the club or, you know, whatever, the little banda club, like, ding, 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 ding. You know, totally, right? The oompa 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 music, whatever. So they'd go to Turi's liquor store. So Turi's liquor store had, you know, the beer. They'd drink the beers and they'd, you know, they eat like, you know, Twinkies and shit, all this different stuff, right? So then one time, Turi calls Eddie. He goes, "Hey, man, I need your help. You gotta help me just do some work at the shop." So Eddie goes, "All right, cool." So it was a day old bread shop. So that means everything was expired. But you know, it's Twinkies don't ever really expire, right? So Turi would spray on the expiration date some hairspray. And then wipe off the expiration date. It just worked. So Eddie's like, "All right, cool." So Eddie's helping them out. They're all doing it together. Like, yeah, they're laughing. You know, at the club, they had a couple of beers. They're doing this. Eddie's like, "Yeah, man. Yeah, you know, yeah, no one actually knows. Man, we're giving these guys like this old expired Twinkies, and everybody's cool with it. Yeah, that's fun. Like, we're getting one over on people." And then he's like, "Hey, wait a minute. I eat this shit." Yeah. He's like, "Every night I'm here drinking and eating this stuff. You're making me eat this day old bread." Anyways, that was Eddie.
Eddie. There was also another funny story that I had said at the when I inducted Eddie into the Hall of Fame for WWE. Yeah. Eddie was very competitive. I mean, he always cheated to win. I mean, literally, he took his gimmick from home to the ring.
Yeah, he would cheat during Monopoly, playing with me.
Yeah, oh, that's right. Well,
what the hell?
So you can tell that story, but... So we lived in... After me and Eddie got back together, we had got an apartment, and we were... the kids were having squirt gun fights. And so some of the kids didn't have squirt guns, so Eddie's like, "I'm going to come back. I'll be back, but kids, don't leave." So we're just like hanging out. So he went and bought all these small squirt guns for the kids. Well, Eddie went and got this super duper, like...
Super soaker.
Like heavy huge. Duty. And so he got all the kids. He filled up his gun at the store, so he was ready. And he had all the kids open their squirt guns when he got there, so they couldn't defend themselves. And so he always had to win, and these kids were soaked, but that was Eddie. He wanted everybody to have fun. He wanted everybody to lose, and that was a good day for Eddie.
No, Dad was definitely a prankster and a jokester, and he was really funny, especially when he was well. He was a completely different person. But I wanted to share, like, it's more of a sentimental story, but he just had the biggest heart, and I'm sure, you know, like, Vito, you know, he would give the shirt off his back to you, and, yeah. Like, I remember one day I'm coming home, and a boy broke my heart on Valentine's Day. Aww. God, I wish he would be here now and be like, "Damn, I'm..."
what his name is, and we'll troll him on social media.
Oh no, mom taught me to be a classy lady, so I will. But no, he broke my heart on Valentine's Day, and I came home crying, and I'm, you know, crying to mom, and like dad doesn't know what to say at all because he's just like, this is awkward. But he actually went out and got me like a huge bouquet of roses, and he got me like just all the Valentine's like paraphernalia that he could, and he was just like, I know your heart's broken, pero like, here. But yeah, that was dad. He was just so generous and so full of love. Even when he was crazy, his heart really truly was in the right place. But
Eddie, that he was very good at reading what I'll talk for myself, reading me as a person, because we traveled together quite a bit. And when I was in WCW for a while, I was just in a tough spot because I was a baby face, but I wasn't over. It's before I turned heel. You're losing all the time. And we had a match. Remember, we used to do this worldwide tapings in Orlando. We would go basically absolutely insane for 2 weeks, drink every night till 6 in the morning, then go wrestle 3 or 4 matches during the day. And one of the matches I had with Eddie, and we're the last match of the day, and he was going over.
I remember this match.
Do you remember this? Yeah.
I remember.
And I was just bummed out, you know. And Eddie was always great with me in the ring, as he was.
He was bummed out because he had to do a job.
Do a job, Eddie Guerrero. But doing a job for everybody, and even my life was a big giant job at the time to me. But I remember I chopped him, and he said again, and I chopped him. He goes harder, and dude, he had me chop him because he always called the match probably 10 times, and I was whacking him as hard as I could, whack. Whack! And it's like he's not fighting back, he's the heel. But I hit him as hard as I could, and afterwards I said, of course, he led me to a great match. And after, I said, why did you have me chop you so much? He said, because you needed it. I said, what do you mean? He said, you needed to get that aggression out. And I said, but I'm not angry at you. He said, I know, but you needed it. You needed to beat somebody up. And I'm the guy to do it with. And I just remember thinking, like, yeah.
Yeah, hey,
you know,
sixth sense, he had a sixth sense about him.
Yeah,
right?
It makes me almost cry right now to remember that. Like, just the guy who's like, I know my friend needs something, so I'll give him just something little. And I still remember how many thousands of matches that we had. I still remember that, you know?
I told you, yeah.
He was the same for you?
Yeah, no, for sure. But he had a, that was pretty, like, mind-blowing right now. I was like, but Eddie he had like a sixth sense, and I don't know if y'all saw it, but we never really talked about it. But so enough times to where, like, when Eddie would, like, we would be driving, and he'd be like, man, I don't feel, something's wrong. Something's not going right. And then we'd, like, get a flat tire, boom, and make squirts, like.
Really?
Like, oh, yeah. And, I mean, enough so to where when any time he said, hey, something's weird, something doesn't feel where, I would sit and listen, like, what? What do you mean? And the night that, you know, the last night that I was with him, and not to get too much into that at all, but he called me. He goes, hey, man, can you, I've told this on your podcast before. That's the Jericho podcast, by the way. I talk to Jericho. No, but really, guys, he goes, hey, man, he calls me and he goes, can I talk to you? I said, yeah, hold on a second. I got to run downstairs to the lobby and go get something, but I'll be right back up. So then I called him right afterwards and said, hey, what room are you in? What's up? And he goes, no, it's okay, man. It's cool. And I said, no, come up. No problem. And he goes, no, you know what? It's okay. I'm good. I goes, okay, I'll see you in the morning. And that's the last time we spoke.
Wow.
But he had a sixth, I wonder what he was going to tell me. That sixth sense. He had something that he was going to tell me enough to where he goes, hey, I need to talk to you. It was weird.
I had a dream after Art Barr passed away.
Right.
Who was obviously Eddie's partner in Mexico, and another very complex guy, but just a great guy, off his rocker as we all were. But I had a dream that that Art came to me and said, I'm okay. Tell Eddie that I'm okay. I told Eddie, and he said, I had the same dream.
No way.
I had the same dream that Art came and said, I'm okay.
Wow.
I don't remember if it was the same night, but I remember I called him. It was like around Christmas time in 1994 after Art passed away to tell him. They said, I had the same dream.
Wow.
You know, some
clairvoyant type stuff.
Yeah.
There, right?
No,
yeah.
Well, like, I have Eddie. A story about that, too, and it's really weird. I don't know if Dad passed anything like that on to me, but, well, I know that because it drives my husband crazy. Like, are you okay? I'll ask him, are you okay? And he's like, I'm fine, whatever. I'm like, you're not okay. And he was like, I'm fine, 2 hours later. Like, the spill of the emotions. Well,
yeah.
But regarding my dad, so we're used to it. Like, all of our families are used to it when you're in the wrestling business. Like, oh, Dad's going again on his trip, whatever. You know what I mean? Like, hug, bye, see you later. See you later. The day that he went on the loop where he passed away, I was really, really upset he was leaving. Like, really upset. Sorry. And I gave him the longest hug, and I cried. Like, I don't know why. Like, I was just crying, and like, I'm really gonna miss you. And
but you know, usually when we drop Eddie off, it was so routine, just like we do. We
yeah, like
all
how
drive
weird.
To the airport, you know, we. You know, I'll say bye, okay, bye. He'd be like high-fiving the kids, bye. And then, okay, we drive off and that's it. For some reason that morning, or it was just...
Something was different.
He just stayed a little longer with us. And we, after the fact when he passed away, we're like, oh my gosh, like, was this something that... Was this what was going on? And another thing to that was that that morning that he passed away, I got a phone call at 5:30 in the morning, and it was Eddie, but usually he would just call, and he would wait for me, you know, to call him back whenever I would wake up. And for some reason, I heard it, and I was just like, no, I'll just call him back later when I wake up. And I hate myself every day, because if I answered it, I would have heard from him. And that's something you just never know. Like, you never know what God has in store for you
that's
that
right.
day.
You know, go ahead, Shaw.
Just tell your families you love them every day.
Yeah.
Like, tell your loved ones, like, don't wait. Like, let them know, you know, even if it's just a phone call. Like, my husband makes fun of me because he's like, you understand, you told your mom like 5 times you loved her in one conversation about chips. I was just like, yeah, like, that shit changes you.
Yeah.
When you lose someone like that.
I felt too, like, Eddie, towards the last part of his life, he's got really spiritual, right? Like, maybe he had some premonition. I don't know, but this is so rare. And we just started doing group prayers in AEW again. We used to do it all the time with Eddie. It had to be group prayer. But my point is, Eddie would have Bible studies in the locker room, which in a wrestling locker room is a very strange thing because it's not the most Christian of environments. but he would never push it on anybody. But people would go to Eddie. I remember Big Show one time was in the back, and Eddie had his Bible and was reading some stuff. And after this, I said, what's up? He said, oh, I was having some problems. And I just told Eddie, and he said, I got something to read for you. Actually, you gave me his Bible for a while. You let me borrow it for a bit, which meant a lot to me. But he would do that. Like, who would do that? And also, who would have the trust to go to Eddie, go to a guy in a wrestling environment where it's, oh, you're going to be a Bible guy? He people went to him for advice about God.
He led by example. He really did. And that's, you know, you people preaching, you know, whatever, buy my product, or, you know, follow my God or whatever. They'll preach to you. But the guys that really get to you are the ones that lead by example. What gets you to ask, like, hey, what are you doing? Like,
right.
Why?
Great point.
What is this working, like, for you? You're like, you know, and then that was kind of, it was Eddie. Eddie was one of those guys that everybody knew what he was about, but knew that it was about him and not, and, you know, he just had love for everybody. And then people would come to him for advice, and for advice about life, about God, about family, about everything.
He was also, too, as we know, super humble and very hard on himself.
Yeah.
Very hard
oh
on himself.
My God.
So hard on
you know,
himself.
You know, like, I remember when he was the world champion, if the business was down, like, if they went to a town and they did 3,000 people, and the next time they went and it was 2,500 people, he would take it on him.
It's personal, yeah.
It was his fault. And I was like, dude, it's business. He's like, no, this is on me. And if he was a babyface and one person said, you suck, he would lose it.
if he was a heel and one person said, "We love you, Eddie," he would lose it so, so hard on himself.
Well, yeah, that's why we all love being heels better, because when we're good guys, we got you guys, you know, cheering us, but there's always those few people going, "You suck." And I'm like, "Wait a minute, you're supposed to like me." And then all of a sudden, we're the heels, and then everybody hates us, except for a couple of people going, "Yeah, you're good." And I'm like, "Dude, I don't need your help. Tell your mom I want my underwear back. You know, I don't need anything." And that's the best part, being the heel. But that was why Eddie loved being a heel, because it was so much easier for everybody that he to hate him, as opposed to having everybody love him except for like three people, not like him. He would take it super personal.
Well, even after he'd have the best matches, he would call me up and he'd be like, "Man, tonight sucked. Like, it was horrible." And I'd watch it on TV and I'm like, I thought it was pretty incredible. Like, people were cheering, and he was so hard that it wasn't until like maybe like two or three days later that he'd be like, "I guess it was okay." And I'm like, "Oh my god!"
And we look back at those matches now, right, and say, "Wow, they were amazing." These matches that weren't, you know, he'd come out, or we're all the hardest on ourselves for sure. But you know, he'd come out and be like, "Oh man, that messed up. Oh, I shouldn't have done this." And you look at that match now, and it's like stands the test of time.
Well, Sherilyn and I knew when Dad was watching his matches back at home, be like, "Oh shit, don't go in the living room," like, because he was usually like real hard on himself, and he just had a mood on him, and we were just leave him for an hour, give him a minute.
Right, Eddie. In life, we always say it was kind of like, you know, like, you know, like Eddie was just going through life always like, "Hey guys, what's going on?" But when it came to wrestling, he was a genius. And he wasn't always right all the time. It wasn't always clicking for him. But when it clicked, dude, it clicked so freaking good.
It's magic.
Right?
Magic.
When he clicked,
when he
was in that zone, there was nobody better.
When he came to WWE with Benoit and Dean and Perry Saturn, and Eddie came as the Radicals.
The Radicals, yeah.
About 2 weeks in, I was talking to Brian Gewirtz, who was the head writer at the time. And he said, we were talking about Benoit. "We'll work with Benoit, we'll do this." And he's like, "Well, we're going to have you do something with Eddie." I'm like, "Okay, that's fine." And he's like, "No, Vince says Eddie's the one." Because at the time, this is pre-Latino heat. Eddie did not have that personality yet. But Vince saw it 2 weeks in. He said, "Eddie's the star." I said, "Eddie over Benoit, over Perry, over Dean, Eddie's the star." And look what he turned into. You know, because this is something I use this as an example to some people sometimes. Eddie got fired from the WWE.
Right.
He passed out in the locker room.
Many times.
Yeah. Ironically, he passed out in the locker room in Minneapolis at the Target Center.
Yep.
And Jim Ross had to let him go. And he went and worked his way up through the system to prove himself. I told somebody recently that's having problems, go out and work for 3 or 4 months. Up, don't get loaded, and people will start getting the reputation that you're doing good. Eddie did that. My dad's right over there. My dad went and saw Eddie at some convention center in Winnipeg, Manitoba, at an independent show, because he wanted to prove himself. When he came back from that, that's when Latino Heat was born.
He was so good when he came back. He came back and he was so in shape. He looked like his action figure. That's how in shape he was, and he was just firing on all cylinders and just going. Like, you could see this rebirth in him, man. It was amazing.
Even
not just in his life, but like in the ring for sure, but his life, it was like a fire in him.
Remember when he had his cheat meals? I mean, he used to love like cheesecake and all the junk food he could eat, but when he was dieting, if you gave him a piece of brownie or a piece of dessert, it was like minuscule.
He's Mickey,
like,
there's a piece of egg yolk in that egg.
I know.
There's butter on the chicken. There's
only 2 seconds of the Pam spray on the on
oh
the
my
pan.
Gosh. Yeah, he was
freaking
so
Pam
picky.
Spray.
When
man,
he got
all
super, remember he got super cut up. I remember he worked with Mysterio and one of the things. He was so cut up.
Yeah,
he was. What he would do, he would go on the bike, cardio like 45 minutes a day, work out for like 30 minutes a day, and then go do a 30-minute match in the house show. He would literally walk like this.
Oh, yeah.
Like, Eddie, you need some carbs. No, I'll just have another salad, bro. A salad isn't going to do anything. All he was eating was salad, and he had zero energy until it came for the match. And then, like you said, switches on. Bah, 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 and then after, great match. Thanks, bro.
If this was the curtain right here, we would joke because he'd walk like this, and then all of a sudden, right through the curtain, he'd like the Superman. And he'd be like, this match, bam, bam, bam. And it's unbelievable when he's walking through the curtain again. As soon as he went through the curtain, he'd go,
Were you guys together at that time when he got fired and had to work his way back up the ladder?
Yeah, we were together. In fact, that's probably when everything that the fan hit the shit.
Shit hit the fan.
Yeah, and it went back down and went back up again.
Did you guys talk about that? Like, I got to go out there and reprove myself, or was it just trying to stay alive and put food in your...
Eddie went to rehab.
Okay.
You know, so... I mean, gosh, he must have went through 13 rehab check-ins, and he would go in, and it went through a series until the very last one with the firing of WWE. I sold the house. I left him. We went bankrupt. We lost everything. We had a boat. I was getting notices on my door saying, you know, it's been repossessed, call. And I'm like, no, take it. I mean, we had lost everything. And I had to literally step away for Eddie to do the work on his own, because I was a huge enabler for Eddie. I did everything for him. And I was sick too, because I was in the disease just as much of trying to control the whole environment and getting him better. And Eddie worked his ass off. And for the first year of rehab, he could only call us because we didn't see him that much.
I would get letters from him. Like, yeah. He would send me a card all the time.
Yeah. And I didn't go to family day because my point of view was I didn't believe it, because I saw it happen so many times. And he had to literally, do the work on his own. And we tried to get divorced for, like, 2 years straight. And it never worked out. I'm like, just divorce me already. And he called me, like... Get your lawyer on the phone. Let's do this. And but God had a reason why we never got divorced. And during that time, he was working the indies, and he got his own apartment, and he had the girls, and he had to build that relationship with the girls and with all the family. And I still wasn't with him, but I was watching him, and he was doing it. And that's all my prayers were. It was for him to do what he wanted to do, but it was up to him to do that work.
But he did it.
Yeah,
he did. He 100% did it.
He did it.
Completely different person when he came, when he was
thinking,
better.
Like, all the people that I've worked with and seen in 30 years of doing this, and I never worked a lot with Eddie in WWF, very rarely, but probably, if you had to hard press it, maybe legit the greatest total package performer. Honestly, as a wrestler, second to none. But when he got that Latino heat, and then I just saw some stuff a couple months ago with you guys, Los Guerreros. That's when you became a star, was when you were with Eddie with Los Guerreros. He became one, and then made you one.
He carried me for sure.
But you learned from him, and you became Chavo, man.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, you're right, for sure. I definitely broke out of my shell. Eddie, we knew it already. We all knew that this guy was super special in the ring. You know, he was just so good, and everything he did was just so good, and he was just getting better and better. What sucked is that it took, and I've talked to a couple of guys, my Latino world order there, I talked to them about that. You know what? It sucked that he had to die. He had to pass away for the rest of everybody to admit it, to have, you know, like WWE and whatever, not just point anybody out, but for them to actually see it and admit it and say that this guy was arguably the best of all time. But he had to pass away for that. We all knew it already. But when he was alive, it was like, hey, well, you know, you're just a cruiserweight. You know, you're a good hand. I mean, you can make everybody look good.
Right.
And that's kind of the way it was. And unfortunately, that had to kind of happen. And now everybody's realizing, they see his matches, how good he actually was. One of my buddies posted on Facebook, it was Ricky Reyes. And he Ricky, right? Cortez on there and on in Lucha Underground. But he posted a match with in Japan. It was Pegasus Kid. Benoit was already doing the Four Horsemen stuff, because he had the Four Horsemen tight, against Black Tiger, Eddie. Man, what a match. And it wasn't high spot. They sold moves. I mean, they worked moves. They wrestled.
They could wrestle.
They built a storyline. It was amazing. Like, and it holds true to today, just how good it was.
I used to see Eddie and Chris and Eddie and Dean, both of them at different times, arguing over who was going to go over. And usually it's like, I'm going to go over. They were the other around. You're winning. No, you're winning. You're going over. No, you're going over. Dean,
I'm telling you, you're going over. Eddie. No, Chris. But they were arguing to put each other over because those three guys had such chemistry. Take any three and put mix and match them. Just go watch some of those matches and you'll see, because you forget. That style is lost.
That's very few and far between too. He's got people that he worked with that were just click on all cylinders, and they would do the same. They put each other over. You got people like Flair and Steamboat just go out there and just destroy every match. You know what I mean? To me, it was probably Ray. I mean, we just would just try our hardest to make each other look as good as we can, and which made the matches even that much better. You know.
But Vito, even after Eddie got sober, it's like something clicked in his brain, because the Los Guerreros, your vignettes, like with the baby stroller and like you went on Mancha My Burrito, you know, in the car. God. Like, that was so.
Hey, funny. We were heels and you guys all hated us, and it was awesome. We were booing us. It was, you know, we never won with anything fancy. Every time we cheated to win, every single time, the office would go, hey, why don't you guys try like a double frog splash? I'm like, why? Why? You can't, you got to clap that. Every time we would just like snake it out of you to where you guys hated us, and that's what we wanted. That was our passion. Hey, I wanted you guys to call me, you beaner, son of a bitch, piece of crap. I watched what I wanted. That's what I want. That's what I strive for. And then we had this idea to say, hey, how about we went to Vince when you could still talk to Vince at catering, and we sat down with him, and we were talking, saying, hey, we wanted to be, you know, what a this lie, cheat, steal gimmick, and we want to do. And there, he's like, "Great, awesome." By the end of the day, Bruce Pritchard was coming up to us and saying, "Hey, you know, next week we're flying Eddie out to Beverly Hills. You already live close to there, so we're going to be filming this, and we're shooting these vignettes." And I'm like, "Wow, that was fast." And then we got to shoot the vignettes, and we have a whole crew. I mean, we have our own trailers, we have catering, we have the whole thing. I'm like, "Wow, well, we need to knock this out of the park." So we shot, you know, the baby bottle vignette and the pool. They were cleaning your pool vignette and dancing in the back. We shot those that day, and they aired, we came out. Oh, the golf one was later, but we were heels, and they aired. You guys booed us. Nothing changed. The next week after they aired, we walked out and we heard, you know, Viva la Raza, and we heard, yay! Everybody cheered us. And as we walked out, we went, oh, shit. We're good guys now. We're baby faces. Really? We're like, hey, okay, hi. Like, we literally were like, oh, man, really? Okay.
Yeah. As we start to wind down here, Vicky, before Eddie passed away, was he in some pain? Was his body breaking down?
Yeah, you know, this is interesting because back then when Eddie was wrestling a lot, he would forget things, and there was just a lot of signs that I saw from him, like he was just always tired. And having the concussions and the CTE, you know, studies come out, I wish I would have said something. I wish more awareness of, and I was at home with the girls, but you really don't see the pain that he's in until he comes home. But there's nothing you can do, because it's like he was home for 2 days, so you just like take him right back out again. And he had a lot of pain, and you know, he couldn't do surgery because to take time off, it was unheard of, because I can't get time off.
Don't lose your spot.
Yeah.
I guess just to finish off, give us a great memory that you have of Eddie, and I'll kick it off while you think of one. I thought of this the other day when Neil Peart from Rush passed away. The first thing I thought of is, Eddie would be pissed, and Eddie can now go hang out with Neil Peart because he loved Rush. And that's true. You don't know that. And they've said that Neil Peart is the most air-drummed drummer of all time. Tom Sawyer is the song. We all know it. Da 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 da. I remember I was driving, and that was on the radio, and they came over, and I was and Eddie was air-drumming that part, just going nuts. And, you know, he's like, because he was playful. You know, he's playful. Like you said, he'd be goofy. He's like, na-na-na-na. Da-na-na-na.
Yeah.
Da-na-na-na. Then he hits my head. Like, what the f*** you doing? I'm driving. Da-na-da-da. And, yeah, it's just like, you know, you remember those things. I'll never forget. Like, that's the first thing I thought of when Neil died. Is like, Eddie would be sad, but he gets to maybe say hi to him at some point.
Yeah. I think Eddie's personality was so much fun. He was a cheater all the time. We used to go through hurricanes in Tampa. And we would always play Monopoly to make the time go by. Well, Eddie would, we'd have a candlelight. We had a Monopoly on the table, and it's us and the girls. And every time the light would, or Eddie would cough, and the candle would go out, well, Eddie would move his piece further.
The candle would go out.
Yeah, he goes, it's windy outside, you know, it's good. And so we're like, oh, okay. But then after a while, I guess we caught him in the act. And the girls were so pissed because they could have won like 3 games that night. Mm-hmm. But Eddie was just like so happy. He's like, well, I won. You know, there's nothing you can do to get back with it.
Teaching you a lesson, guys.
Yeah, yeah. He was just a funny guy.
Yeah.
On a more sentimental note, like I miss his smell and his hugs. Like they were just... And his laugh. Oh, God. He had the most infectious laugh when he was laughing. And
yeah.
I just to say, like, I'm forever extremely humbled and thankful for my dad giving himself so much to all of you. And I'm just honored that I got to witness it for the time I got to. So,
Vito, take it home, baby.
So many memories of he and I, you know, I mean, stealing cigarettes as kids and smoking them at the bull ring, you know, and watching our parents, you know, our family wrestle and stuff and wanted to be just like them and playing in the rings, you know, for sure. But I think this really great one has got to do with the fans and who Eddie was. So we're wrestling in Canada somewhere. It was like a small arena, cold, like it was a hockey rink somewhere in Canada. And we're wrestling the Bashams, the Basham brothers. So they're getting heat on us, and they're beating us up. And I'm selling in the ring, and I know what the crowd's supposed to sound like without even watching. I can hear, okay, this part they should start coming right now, or they should start being quiet right now, or so they're supposed to be quiet because it's getting heat on me and it's beating me down. I'm selling, but I hear this weird sound in the audience, like. I go, wait, that's not right. What is that sound? Something's going on. So I look up. Eddie was on the ground selling by the guardrail. Next thing you know, he jumped over the guardrails, chasing somebody into the crowd. Like, and I'm in the ring selling. Like, what the heck's going on, right? So then Eddie comes back there with the security, you know, stopped everything, and kind of the match kind of stopped. And I'm in the ring, and everything kind of just stopped. Eddie comes back in, and he grabs the microphone, and he goes, hey, apologize for that. I was on the ground, and... somebody looked at me, he was above me, and he grabbed his beer and poured it right on me. And he goes, poured it right on him. And he's sitting there, and he looked at him and poured it right on him. And Eddie was there, and he goes, you know, he's in the ring now. The match has just stopped. It stopped. And he goes, you know, I'm a recovering alcoholic, and I feel like it's a complete disrespect to me, and I lost my cool. I'm sorry. Then he goes, I'm a Christian, and I'm sorry for getting angry. I should be, you know, whatever he's saying, and just apologize. And I'm going, well, how are we? We're in the middle of a match. How are we gonna get this? Like, what? Where are we going from here, right? The Bastion, everybody just in there, kind of like, all right, cool. And then Eddie stops, and then gets done and apologizes, and then he gives the microphone back to whoever, and as he's giving it back, he looks at the Bashams and he goes, jump us. And they jumped us and started going. We went right back into it, right into the finish. We went back and forth, and you know, we went over, and it was just perfect timing that this guy just went from
right
feeling bad, you know, apologizing to you guys, showing the love for you guys, and right back into the match like miss no beat whatsoever. I go, that was Eddie right there. That was just boom.
Thank you guys. This is great. We appreciate it.
Thank you guys.
God bless you, Eddie. We love you, man.
And viva la raza!
Órale!